Welcome to Life Study of the Bible with Witness Lee, a program provided by Living Stream Ministry and featuring the ministry of Watchman Nee and Witness Lee. Witness Lee, a servant of the Lord for over 7 decades on 5 continents, culminated his ministry with a 21-year, book-by-book exposition of the entire Bible, which he called a life study. And we're delighted to bring you short portions of this spoken ministry on today's broadcast. Now, let's join today's life study.
The Bible, especially the Old Testament, is often studied merely in the way of history, looking at names, dates, and places. And though there's some value in this manner of study, for us as believers, the greater need is to see the Bible opened up as a book of life. For this, it is seeing the spiritual significance of events that yields the greatest benefit. And it's in this light that our study of Jeremiah has brought us to consider the final chapters where God's wrath, even his vengeance, is poured out on the one nation on earth that has been the most offensive to him and rendered the most damage upon his chosen people. God's judgment upon Babylon and its significance for God's people today is our topic. And Bill Lawson has joined us for this fellowship. I don't know to call you an amateur historian or by hobby, somewhat also in your service. I know history is very important to you, isn't it?
Yes, we can learn so much from history, especially to help us consider the current situation.
But you would agree, I'm sure, Bill, and particularly as Witness Lee opens it up in these Old Testament books, it's not merely seeing the history, it's the seeing the significance of these events, as then they take on a whole new aspect and we see them, how they relate in the spiritual realm to even our experience. That's where the ultimate benefit comes from these kind of books, isn't it?
Right. Brother Lee, no doubt, was a master at looking at all these seemingly merely historical facts of the Old Testament, but he really sees the spiritual significance behind each one, and that's what's valuable for us as believers today.
Of course, I think most believers realize the parallel between the Old Testament nation of Israel and the New Testament church. That's us. We, as God's chosen ones today, we can see a lot of overlap, a lot of parallel between the experience of Israel and our spiritual experience in these days. And now we come to this most negative of all things, apparently, God's judgment upon Babylon. Say a little bit about Babylon. Maybe a lot of our listeners are not that familiar. Maybe they've heard a little bit in prophecy. Of course, it comes back up in Revelation, and we'll touch some of that today, won't we?
Of course, the first time the mention of Babylon is in Genesis 10 and 11, where Babel is mentioned. God's intention was to have a corporate man who would express God in his image and represent God with his dominion. But we know because of the fall of man, man fell away from God. Man fell away also from God's purpose. Eventually, mankind rebelled to such an extent that they built this tower at Babel, and eventually God had to come in and confound their language. He had to scatter them on the face of the earth. So you see the first principle of Babylon and Babel mentioned in Genesis 10 and 11.
Of course, in our program yesterday, we saw in a symbolic way Babylon having this physical and religious presence throughout at least modern history, and identified so closely with the city of Rome, the Roman Empire, Roman religion. These things are very much in the prophetical sense. Today, I think we're still on the same subject. Focus a little bit more on what Babylon represents to us and the snare that can entrap God's people even today. Let's look first at some of this judgment that God has is saving up for the very end of the age when the final judgment will be carried out upon this Babylon. In chapter 50 of Jeremiah, a couple of verses, "Set yourselves in array against Babylon all around, all those who bend the bow. Shoot at her. Spare no arrow, because she has sinned against Jehovah. Raise a shout against her all around. She has surrendered. Her buttresses have fallen. Her walls have been torn down. For this is the vengeance of Jehovah. Take vengeance on her, as she has done, so do to her." Of course, at the time Jeremiah was writing this, Nebuchadnezzar, this Babylonian king, had come in, taken captive, really, Israel, destroyed the temple, the city, the holy city, carried away the vessels, the holy things, and defiled them. So he wrote this with much feeling. But there's also this future prophetic sense to these verses, isn't there, Bill? And those are important for us.
Right, exactly. You have what was going on right there during Jeremiah's time, the devastation on Israel. And then you have this prophetic word about the future destruction of Babylon coming up.
Another geographical location that's associated with Babylon in its principle, in its significance, is the nation of, or the land of Egypt. Of course, we know the story. Abraham was called out of Babylon, came into the good land, and then during difficult times, he had this habit of kind of slipping down to Egypt where life seemed to be easier and there was a worldly, earthly, material provision and entertainment. And of course, this has a strong spiritual significance as well, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Right.
And his grandson, Abraham's grandson, Jacob, we picked this up in Genesis 42. Now, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you keep looking at one another?" And he said, "I have now heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy grain for us from there, that we may live and not die." Of course, they went down there, but they didn't just buy the grain in return. As it turns out, they were stuck there for several hundred years.
Right.
All right, let's look at these things and their spiritual significance as we join Witness Lee.
Jeremiah was a prophet, taking care, of course, firstly, Israel. Then after that, to take care of the nations. And his taking care of the nations was, firstly, Egypt, and lastly, Babylon. Why this way? Well, this signifies in God's heart, the world today is just, firstly, Egyptian, followingly, Babylonian. But in history, Babylonian world began first, from Babel, right? When they called Abraham, became weak and had some trouble, he tried to drift away into Egypt. From that time, Egypt came up. Babel is the origin, the source of humankind to worship idols, to rebel against God, and to exalt man. The three things. But after these three things began, the world became Egyptian, where people could get a living, could have the enjoyment. If you read Genesis, you could see the sequence. Firstly, Genesis presents us Babel with a rebellion against God, exaltation of man, and the worship of the elders, but people need a better life, need some enjoyment. So Egypt came up. You know, in the most hard time, nearly all the earth didn't have food, but Egypt still had. And all the earth sent people to Egypt to get the food. That is the world. You have Babel, you have Egypt, but now everybody likes Egypt. You could get safety there. You could get food there. You could get enjoyment there.
Okay, Bill, let's focus on the spiritual significance here. When we say, of course, Babylon represents, typifies something in our spiritual, even our human existence, and so does Egypt. Fill in these details for us.
Chris here, Brother Lee, of course, talks about the principle here of Babylon and Egypt. Of course, the judgment here is on Egypt first in Jeremiah chapter 46. And then eventually the last judgment that Jeremiah meted out to the nations, to Babylon, in Jeremiah chapters 50 and 51. But we have to see here also there are other significances here in that he judges Egypt first. Egypt, of course, in the Bible is a type of the world of amusement, the world of entertainment, the world that is godless. For example, you have the Nile River. The Nile River did not depend on the water from heaven, the rain from heaven, showing that the rain from heaven is the very presence of God for his people. So everything in Egypt is something man-made and not for God. It's the world. It's how we make a living. We can get, as believers, easily trapped into the world of making a living. How can I make ends meet in my job and so on, raising my family? And we can easily lose sight of God, give up God, and fall into making a living in the world. So when Brother Lee talks about the spiritual principles here of Babylon and Egypt, according to the book of Genesis, the Babel is mentioned first, and then the children of Israel fell into Egypt. So at Babel in Genesis 10 and 11, you have man's rebellion against God, you have worshiping of idols, you have man's exalting of himself. That's mentioned first. And then when Israel became a nation, right at the time and a little bit after the time of Abraham, Abraham fell into the world. He went down to Egypt. He doesn't say that Abraham went back to Babylon. He came out of Babylon. In order to make a living, he fell into Egypt and he went down south. When we come to Jeremiah in the judgment in chapter 46, he first of all touches Egypt, the world, because in the Lord's view here, this is what traps most believers the easiest. Not so much Babel here, but the matter of making a living. We believers live in the world. We're in the world all the time, and the thing that can ensnare us the easiest is trying to make a living in the world, and then we get ensnared with this amusements and entertainments. So that explains why there's a reversal in the mentioning in Genesis and in Jeremiah.
Of course, as we saw yesterday, and we'll talk a bit more about today, ultimately the final judgment, even at the end of the New Testament, the whole Bible in Revelation, that judgment back upon Babylon. Because more than a source of trouble to us in a everyday way, like Egypt represents, this matter of this occupation and preoccupation with worldly and things and amusements and higher positions and all of the things that are incorporated into our current society. Babylon represents a principle that has been a frustration to God and his interest in his move on the earth, clear back here into the time of Jeremiah, and all the way back to Babel, as you pointed out earlier on. Well, dealing with these things in our daily life, it's one thing to see that God is going to judge them at the end time, but we are those who are experiencing God's full salvation, really need to be saved from these things each and every day in our living, don't we, Bill? And a key point we'll see here in this coming section is that God now, in his dealing with us, has provided a kind of a corporate context for us to be saved and rescued. We know it as the church, and there was this expansion that took place in the Old Testament. Of course, Jacob, in his transformed condition later on in his life, had his name even changed to Israel, meaning that this one had become a prince to God, a transformed one. But now the whole nation is known by this name, Israel. And we see this pointed out even in the New Testament, Galatians and chapter 6, verse 16. As many as walk by this rule, peace be upon them and mercy, even upon the Israel of God. And there's an implication here, Bill. We need the corporate aspect of God's salvation to make it through these difficult things. All right, let's go back to Witness Lee.
We have to see Jeremiah presents us a picture. God came in to judge the nations. Apparently, actually, God came in to make a preparation that he could get the nations restored to be his people in the coming restoration time. And the last one judged and punished by God was Babylon. When God punished Babylon, that means God finished his punishment on the nations. We all have to know, according to Jeremiah, God's elect, God's chosen people, are very much involved with the nations. This typifies that today we are very much involved with the world. And the world is in many aspects. At least, according to Jeremiah, the world is of nine aspects. How we are going to face these aspects of the world. This means we know how to live the church life. Otherwise, our church life will be just diluted by different aspects of the world. Such a book presents us such a picture that we know how to avoid every kind of aspect of the world, that we will not be wrapped up, mixed up with any aspect of the world. God will come in to judge this matter, and God will come in to make a clearance between the church as God's elect and all the aspects of the world. So today, in our church life, there will be no more anything Babylonian. We should clear up from all the things, then we will be here under God's dispensing to enjoy God, not to enjoy Egypt. We are now enjoying God, and the church life is our living place. Then we'll be blessed by God.
Bill, a fair amount of what we just heard may not be that familiar to our listeners. Let's talk about that a little bit. As we looked at, as we saw this verse in Galatians, spiritually speaking, today the church is the Israel of God, God's corporate people. Of course, there's still the literal Israel that has a place in God's plan, but it is this corporate aspect that provides us a way for our daily salvation. Talk about this in a practical way that our listeners can relate to.
Of course, I'm glad you mentioned this verse in Galatians 6:16, which when Paul wrote to the Galatians, he talked about the Israel of God. Of course, those are the believers in Christ, the physical Israelites. They were plagued by two things, Egypt and Babylon. We believers today are also plagued by the very same things that plagued the nation of Israel. Number one, Egypt, the love for the world, trying to make a living, the world all around us, pulling at us, trying to bring us into entertainment, and the matter of idolatry, rebelling against God. We, even as believers, many times try to make a name for ourselves, trying to be someone famous, even in the Christian world. This is also the principle of Babylon. But how can we apply this? In a sense, the remedy is a corporate kind of church life, I would say, where we as believers cannot make it alone. So we need a lot of fellowship with other believers in Christ. We need to meet together, fellowship together. And as we do this, so many of these things are just dealt with. We just sense that in the fellowship, we're supplied with the Lord's life and grace. We're able to go on with the Lord. And then these things of Egypt and Babylon don't seem to have that effect on us as they would if we were trying to do it alone.
This aspect of God's salvation, then, is very much connected to our linkage and fellowship with the other believers with whom God has placed us. And that needs to extend beyond a once or even twice a week sort of formal gathering, but implies that there is a daily, I mean, even in the book of Acts, from house to house daily, they were breaking bread. You could tell there was a kind of this perpetual meeting that was going on in these cities that the church was existing in, and that provided a whole context for God's people to experience a practical daily salvation, didn't it?
They really broke bread from house to house. They met, they taught and preached Jesus as the Christ from place to place. They really had a church life there in Acts, in Jerusalem. And that, no doubt, rescued them from Egypt, the Egypt of that day, and the Babylon of that day.
And we need that same rescue today. Ultimately, as we saw yesterday in great detail, come back to it a bit today in the last segment, Babylon was really that thing which frustrated, offended God to the uttermost. In chapter 1, Daniel says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he," meaning Nebuchadnezzar, "brought them into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God." This represents, I think, in great, great, vivid detail how offensive Babylon is and has been to God in his eyes, and how it is doomed to be judged, and we need to be saved from it. All right, here's Witness Lee once more.
Because Babylon was the nation that destroyed, number one, the nation of Israel. Number two, destroyed the people of Israel. Then number three, destroyed the holy temple of God. Number four, destroyed the holy city of God. And number five, destroyed the holy land of God. The nation, the people, the temple, the city, and the holy land. Then number six, the Babylonian army under Nebuchadnezzar captured the holy vessels. You know where he put them? He put them into the idol temple, into the temple where Nebuchadnezzar worshipped the idols. That was an insult to God, to the uttermost. This is why in God's verdict about the judgment on Babylon, it says at least three times, this is God's vengeance. God was avenging himself on Babylon. Babylon was the top one offending God. There was a reason why the Bible identifies King of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, with Satan in Isaiah 14, because he was really one with Satan. So God's biggest, top, number one enemy is Babylon. And this Babylon actually is the beginning of the human government on this earth. It's also the conclusion of the human government on this earth. When God will destroy the restored great Babylon in religion and in politics, God curses up the earth to rid off his number one enemy. What Jeremiah wanted to do is this, just to present us God's economy, that we all have to turn back to our source, origin, that is, the triune God as the fountain of the living water. We will enjoy him. We will receive his dispensing into us for the accomplishment of his economy. And God will take care of the world.
Now, Bill, I think this touched something here that made an impact, at least in me. One of the things about Babylon that is so offensive to God is that it really represents the totality of human government, which is really man's best effort to survive and endure and get along without God, isn't it?
You have the destruction here. Brother Lee talks about the five kinds of destruction, which when you look at this, you can really see why the Lord's vengeance will be poured out upon Babylon and was poured out in such a way, because everything that represented God's interests on the earth was devastated by the Babylonians. So the Holy Land, the Holy City, yeah, the Holy Temple, all these vessels were carried away. Everything that God needed to carry out his divine economy was just carried away and wasted by the Babylonians. So you can really understand why his judgment is so severe on Babylon. God's whole plan and whole purpose with man, that man would be the vessels,
yes,
that God could use for his purpose. And those vessels there are types also not only of the believers, gold and silver vessels, but also of our experiences of the Lord and our enjoyment of the Lord. Babylon confiscates our enjoyment of the Lord and our experiences of the Lord. And also it even confiscates the very people that God needs to carry out his purpose and carries the people away so God cannot work with man any longer.
So these two worldly systems, the political worldly system, the religious worldly system represented by Babylon, have devastated God's interests on the earth for now thousands of years. And there's a kind of a final cleanup that comes at the end of the age. This is seen in vivid detail, gory detail, in Revelation 17 and 18 particularly. But for us, we want to be saved out of not just the physical Babylon and the Babylonian,
right,
religious system. We want to,
right,
be saved out of the principle of Babylon,
right,
in our daily living. Bill, I appreciate the times you and I have had together.
Yeah, very good.
Good. Thank you for your help,
okay,
and always good to have you here.
Thank you.
And we invite you to join us again for this final program on Jeremiah. For Bill Lawson, I'm Chris Wilde. Thank you very much for listening today.